The Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 27, Here's Not Here Review.
Welcome to The Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of The Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts, Brian and Ruthie.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to another fine episode. Well, we think it's fine. Of The Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And tonight we are going to cover Season 6, Episode 4's very strange title, Here's Not Here. And this was written by Scott M. Gimple, the showrunner, and directed by a veteran TV director by the name of Stephen Williams, who has directed several Lost episodes, 25, actually. So that's like probably 20% of them, something like that. A lot of them. And we'll go right into ratings. Ratings for this episode were up again. That's good. They seem to be going in the right direction from the start of the season.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, I think we talked about this before, about how the ratings really reflect the previous episode. You know, like,
yes.
Oh, that last episode was super good, so, but I don't know.
Yes, I wonder how many people were disappointed by this episode because they didn't get any resolution. Or very limited resolution, anyway. But anyway, 13.339 million with a 6.8 in the 18 to 49. That is up. It's not up a lot, but last week was 13.143 million. So about 200,000 more people and a 6.7. So a tenth of a point. Talking Dead was down from the previous week. Of course, last week, everybody was going, what happened to Glenn? It got 4.639 million and a 2.3 share versus 6.2 million and a 3.1 share last week. So the only news that I have, and unfortunately, we don't have news to report because we were there because we weren't, but Walker Stalker Con Atlanta was last weekend, and I've heard that it was quite the conference or convention, I should say. One of these days, one of these years, I want to go to that. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I want to go. It'd be cool.
Oh, maybe next year.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
Okay, so now it's our own ratings, which are much different than TV ratings, critiques of this episode. And this is going to be an episode for me that I know when I watch it as an entire season, like I binge watch, the mark is going to go, or the rating's going to go up. I'm positive of that. But I'm still pissed off about the fact that we didn't get any Glenn resolution. So automatic point deduction. So I give it, although I like the episode a lot, 8.5 pointless acts. And it's pointless because we didn't need to see this episode this time. We could have waited.
That's funny. So in other words, if we had had some kind of Glenn resolution wedged in there somewhere, you would have given it a 9.5?
I am almost positive of that, yes. I think that if there was some advancement with the Glenn plot and like in, say, episode 4, and this had been maybe episode 5 or episode 6, I think my rating would have gone up.
Okay, so it's not so much the episode itself, it's the placement of the episode?
That's correct.
Okay, that makes more sense, because I was like, if they had put some kind of random note to what had happened to Glenn in this episode, I would have been pissed off and like deducted more, because I mean, I knew I wasn't going to get any Glenn resolution, so that didn't really like affect me one way or the other. Honestly, I was just kind of thinking, well, it's not going to be, I mean, I was already expecting to not get it, so I wasn't, you know, it didn't have any impact on my like or dislike, I guess, of the episode. But so I gave it 8 out of 10, perfectly good zippers wasted.
So even with the fact that it didn't affect your rating, you still, it wasn't up to par with some of the other episodes for this season.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I probably agree with you that it's placement more than anything else. But I don't honestly know. I mean, okay, so I haven't seen the rest of the episodes, so I don't know what they're going to be like. But I'm not quite sure that there would have been a good place for this episode, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But it was more than just placement for me. I kind of, there were other things about this episode that I was kind of like, I don't know. It's a mixed bag for me, I guess.
Yeah, I agree too. And I had other problems with it too, that in some ways I might have overlooked. But okay, well, we got some other ratings this week. Robert C. Rated this episode 9. Totes my goats.
Totes my goats.
Reminded me of Ham's My Biscuits.
That's hilarious. I still don't really know what that means.
I don't either.
Google it or something. It's one of those, must be one of those southern things that I missed the boat on or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, next up, Judy with two eyes says, I rate this episode 9.4 bloody pickup sticks. That's funny.
Sophie rated this episode 9 out of 10 incomprehensible bloody messages. Yes. Yes, I get that one.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Dieta says, I rate this episode 8 out of 10 boring kung fu movies I wouldn't watch. And she also told us that her rating last week gave it to us in emojis that did not quite translate over to our show notes, but it was 9 out of 10 heartbroken and tears. So, oh, and also she told us, she let us know that S/N means side note. And she laughed at us because we are so funny.
Yeah, we are funny. It was funny, actually. You
know, I'm like, oh, that makes complete sense. I feel like an idiot.
I did too. It's like, side note.
Side note. Oh, of course.
And here I was thinking it was like, so now.
So now.
And, what she had written was S/N so. And I was thinking was so now so, which made no sense. So I'm like, okay, it couldn't be that. But, yeah.
Yep.
Jeff gives it 8.5 bo staffs to the head.
Nice. And we got a last minute submission. Malika gives it 9 out of 10 art house movies jammed in the middle of The Walking Dead. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I love that.
It's kind of true, you know.
Yeah, definitely it was. So
they said in the... on Talking Dead, they said that they, or Lenny James said that they completely filmed these, or they filmed everything in the first half, and then they filmed this episode. So they had already done all the other stuff before they did this one. I guess it was kind of a secret from the cast as well.
Okay. Well, now is that time for our famous segment.
Awesome song! Yes. And I would like to point out that you guys can all feel free to give us awesome sauce as well as ratings. We are not opposed to listener awesome sauce.
Yeah. In fact, if you want to give us a sound effect for awesome sauce.
Yeah, that would always be cool too.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I have one in mind for discussion, but I haven't had a chance to actually prepare it. Mm. But yeah, if you have one for discussion as well, let us know. For any of our segments, let us know. Okay, so awesome sauce. There was, well, we've talked a lot about how I didn't like how the flashbacks from episode 1 were done. I'm going to keep harping on it. But I did like how the flashbacks were done in this episode, because they were exactly the way that No Sanctuary's flashbacks were done, except they were kind of done in reverse. So if you remember No Sanctuary, it started with then and then now. Well, this was now and then. So I thought that was kind of cool. And I don't know if that was a continuity thing or a stylistic thing. I know that Scott M. Gimple wrote both episodes, but I liked that part. So anyway,
cool.
What about you?
I don't know if this is necessarily an awesome sauce or what, but there was another A, another big, huge A in the episode. Kind of made me think, I guess, or whatever. But anyway.
Big, huge A. I vaguely remember an A, but where was it?
I sort of feel like it might be part of a larger word. Like, I think Morgan, it was when Morgan was like, oh gosh, riding on the trees or whatever. And he was writing, I don't know. See, I think he was actually spelling out clear on the trees using like one letter per tree. But all we could see was the big, huge A to his left. And, I don't know. I don't know why I think that he was spelling out clear, but I do think that he was spelling out clear. But it, nevertheless, it was like big, huge. It was like, hey, dummies, there's a big, huge A right here. Thanks, writers. But anyway, I thought that was cool. I think it's before he meets Eastman. Mm. So I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Like, I think it's after like the zombie bonfire or whatever.
Eastman. Speaking of that. One of the first things that comes out of Eastman's mouth in the episode was a word that I never thought I'd ever hear on The Walking Dead. Although I wouldn't have been surprised if I heard it on Fear the Walking Dead. And that's falafel.
Falafel. Yummy.
I actually, when I heard that word, I was like, falafel? Wow. Anyway.
That's funny.
I like Middle Eastern cuisine, so.
Me too. Mm.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yep. I like all different kinds of stuff. I make some really, really nummy, nummy hummus. Yum, yum, yum.
Oh.
Oh, yes.
Look at that. See, that's part of our chemistry. I love hummus.
I make hummus. I like to eat hummus.
Yes.
That's funny. Okay, so in reference to when there's a big, huge A, it is after the zombie burn pile, and he's like, I don't know why he was doing this, but he's like dipping his, it's basically like he's using the walker blood for ink, I guess, because he's like mushing his little spear around in the zombie guts, and then the next cut is to him writing another letter on a tree, and it kind of clearly like pans around so that you can see, hey, there's a big, huge A right here. And I don't know. Maybe he wasn't spelling out clear. Maybe that was just me having a, like, why the heck would he write an A there? But I don't know. So anyway, that was where the A was.
Okay.
Like, I think in between the spears, and then he's like done with the spears or whatever, and then he finds that like really beautiful clearing, and then next thing you know, he finds Eastman. Anyway, that's where it is. So it's like right before Eastman. Okay, so my next awesome sauce was the camera lens effect when Morgan was having his I guess episodes, if you want to call them that.
Mm-hmm.
It was like he was in a blurry tunnel. And honestly, it reminded me of the way that my migraines feel. Like, that's how they look, I guess. Like, if someone were to ask me what my migraines look like, I would say, oh, kind of like that. So, yeah.
I love that too, actually. I had it down, and I would have ended up taking too much awesome sauce points. So I moved it down in the discussion. But yeah, I love that one. One awesome sauce point, and it has to do, of course, I mentioned about how I kind of docked the episode because of no Glenn resolution or movement whatsoever. But one thing we did get out of the episode, and you had to be paying attention right at the end, but when that voice shouts out, "Open the gate! Open the gate!" That was Rick. And I questioned whether it was Rick until I had the captioning on, and it clearly said, "Rick says, open the gate." So it was Rick.
Ah, so captions ruining it for everybody.
Well, in any case, it was Rick, and he somehow survives that issue with the RV. So that's good.
Kind of a huge spoiler, I guess, like inadvertent by the caption people. Way to go, guys. Just totally giving crap away that wasn't given away yet or wasn't given yet.
I don't think it was a spoiler, because if you listen to it really closely, which I did, it is clearly Rick's voice. Yeah. But yeah, anyway, so Rick's still kicking. So, you got anything else?
Nope.
Okay. So, now is time for our discussion. So we might as well go into Eastman. I thought that John Carroll Lynch was really good in the portrayal of Eastman. But the only thing I wasn't really sold on was his martial arts skill. He was no Steven Seagal. Like, I thought that, Lenny James and his prowess with the bo staff, I thought that Eastman or John Carroll Lynch, he did not look quite as skilled. And I know on Talking Dead, they said that, what did he say? He only had a week or something to get up to speed with it. Something like that. Maybe 2 weeks. I don't know. But not nearly as long as Lenny James did.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't remember how long he said, but yeah, but I think he said, but then, you know, they told me that I really only had to be like, I don't know, kind of when he was talking, I was thinking to myself, oh, so like a weekend warrior. But he was like, I'm just only supposed to be as good as someone who went to a class every week, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. The one thing that I thought was a weak point in the episode, and I heard another podcast mention it today, so I felt vindicated with it, was the scene where Eastman was bitten. That was, if he's this, you know, Zen martial arts guru, he wouldn't have made that, like, he was very awkward in pushing Morgan to the side and exposing his back to the walker. Like, you would think that he would both push Morgan to the side and also push away the walker at the same time with his bo staff.
Yeah.
But he didn't do that.
You would think that.
Yeah. And I had a problem with how that scene went down.
I had a huge problem with that. That was one of the things that there was that and there were a couple of other, but yeah, I was like, man, so I wrote down specifically the way Eastman saved him was completely ridiculous. I mean, you don't, honestly, if you're gonna, that's how you save someone from, like, I don't know, like a blast of air. You're trying to shield someone from something with your body, and that's not how you protect someone from a walker. You don't swing them around so that, yeah, I just, oh man. I was watching this, just, he could have easily body slammed Morgan out of the way and taken out the walker with his bo staff the way that you said. I was just, why did he not do that? And the only thing I can come up with, once again, is lazy writing. And
yeah,
like I said, I'm kind of over that. I'm going to start docking more and more points if I'm going to mark episodes down, especially an episode like this. You know, I feel like this is an episode that you take your time on, that you take your time, do it right. And they didn't. I mean, it was the last one they did of the first half of the season. So they had plenty of time to come up with a better way for Eastman to get bitten so that he would ultimately die instead of survive, because obviously why else would Morgan leave? But I don't know. And just this way, I was thinking to myself how that type of maneuver, or when that type of maneuver would be used, like in what situation it would be used, but certainly not this one. I mean, oh my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, there were all sorts of things in that, like, for example, I didn't write it down, but it seems to be, there's two things, I guess, you don't want to be in The Walking Dead. The one we know is to be the moral compass.
Right.
If you're the moral compass, you have a target on your head. The second, and this is true for Fear the Walking Dead too, don't be in the medical profession. And of course, you know, he is a psychiatrist, which, you know, that he is a medical doctor. Mm-hmm. I heard one podcast that kept saying he was a psychologist. No, he was a forensic psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm. There is a huge difference. Like 8 years of medical school.
Absolutely. Yeah. And one can prescribe medication and one can't.
Yes.
And anyway, it always seems the case. If they're some kind of medical doctor, they don't survive. Which brings me to the next point. You got Morgan, who's clearly, he's not all there. And so what does he need to get him straight but a psychiatrist? How convenient.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so convenient that he just happens to meet this Zen psychiatrist who can teach him the ways of the world until he exposes his back to a walker.
Stupidly.
You know, stupidly.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, that's kind of true.
Yeah. Convenient. And another thing that I didn't get was there was a whole thing about them taking a trip and him saying how people were so important. Well, you know, if people are so important, like, how come he's been alone all this time?
Yeah, my question in regards to that was, so it seems a little bit ridiculous that Morgan is the first person to stumble across Eastman, you know, but just surely Morgan isn't the first person. So what happened to the other people that may have stumbled across Eastman?
They just happened to be other inmates that were crazy that he didn't bother mentioning. I don't know. Maybe he is. Maybe Morgan was his last graduate, and you know, we didn't hear about the other ones. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I kind of, okay. So we got a few clues, I think, in regards to location on this episode. Eastman said that he walked 30 miles through the dead to get
right
either to his house to the cabin or whatever. So either way, it's the same. It's 30 miles. So basically, that little cabin right there is 30 miles outside of Atlanta, because he lived in Atlanta, right?
Or at least 30 miles from his house, which you would think is suburban Atlanta. So yeah. In any case, yeah, let's say 30 miles. That makes total sense.
Ish. Outside of Atlanta, ish. More or less.
More or less.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because he didn't remark on walking, because he went, he said he went to turn himself in. So he was at the cabin and no one found him. He said they would have, you know, he figures they would have found him eventually, but they didn't know where to look. Well, they probably might have found him eventually, except for the world came to an end, as he said. And then Morgan says the world's not ended or whatever. So he didn't remark about walking from wherever he went to turn himself in to his house. He said he kind of did. He said he walked 30 miles through the dead to get that piece of wall. So yeah. I don't know.
Well, I, th- I think what he said was he lost his car, and then he had to walk 30 miles through the dead. But he didn't say when he lost his car, and for that matter, why he lost his car.
Yeah, or where he lost his car.
Or where.
So,
yeah.
But it seems like that's like, I don't know, kind of a rough estimate, I guess, of approximately the approximate location. And we don't have any idea if that's north, south, east, west, or some direction in between of Atlanta. We just know that it's about 30 miles away-ish or so.
Yeah, probably somewhere between fictional King County, which we have no idea where that is in Georgia, and Atlanta.
Yeah.
So,
and that's where Rick is from.
That's right.
So,
and obviously that's where Morgan was.
Right. And that's where Morgan originated also. So Morgan has kind of, I mean, he's been rather mobile. So he's kind of could have in his roamings or whatever. I mean, okay. So in the episode Clear, was he in the same town where the pilot was, right? Where they started off? Was that the same town?
That was the same town. Okay.
That's what I thought. And so they went back to that town. So the prison isn't that far away from their town either. And in Morgan's roamings, he discovers this little cabin here. So it's probably all just somewhere around on the outskirts of Atlanta, because as we know, they're not really that far from Atlanta either at that time. Anyway, Morgan was not the only one probably that had come across. I mean, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think Morgan was the first person that just stumbled across the cabin? I mean, based on the number of people that stumbled across Morgan, seems kind of unlikely.
It does seem kind of unlikely. It seems that, you know, he probably had others come across, you know. But, you know, another thing to bring up, too, is he mentions about security. Doesn't seem all that secure to me. I mean, I saw lots of walkers in the area. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, poor Tabitha.
Oh, yeah. I was pretty upset about Tabitha.
Bang! And that wasn't a sound effect. That was me. But anyway. Yeah, so it didn't seem all that secure to me. I mean, walkers could... admittedly, walkers, there weren't all that many walkers, but no. Nevertheless, there still were walkers that you had to deal with.
Right.
So, I don't know.
I don't know either. All I know is it seemed a little odd that he was... Well, I mean, I couldn't believe that he would be the first person. Maybe, though, remember he gave Morgan a choice, a couch or take off. And of course, Morgan, being the Morgan that he is, chose his third option. Go back in the cage. But
yeah,
I thought that was kind of funny. But anyway, so maybe they took option B, I think, which was leave instead of stay and hang out on the couch. They were like, peace out, weirdo, or something. Who knows?
You know, and a funny thing is, too, I watched this a couple of times because I thought I was seeing it wrong, but I don't think I was. The very first time that we see Eastman and he, you know, knocks out Morgan, he looks like he's like wearing some kind of monk outfit, like some big long robe.
Yep.
And we never see that again.
Well, that was his bathrobe.
Oh, okay.
So he was, I think, I'm assuming it was morning and he had just woken up and maybe gone to visit his outhouse or something. And what you do when you wake up in the morning and you're going to go out and visit your outhouse, you put on your bathrobe. So I thought the same thing. The very first time I saw it, I thought, man, that was like one of those Shaolin monk robe thingies or whatever. So I paid special attention the second time. And by that, I mean, I remembered that I wanted to pay special attention. So I rewound. And as I was watching that scene, I was like, oh, it's his bathrobe. He's in his bathrobe. That makes sense. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It was his bathrobe.
Yeah. Well, anyway. All right. Well, I guess this is a good time to segue into Morgan himself. Mm-hmm. And the thing that got me, and of course, there was all this crazy writing, and of course, I mentioned pointless acts as my part of my rating. He was spouting all this crazy stuff, and I wanted to do a clip of that because it was just so crazy. Just, it's worth talking about. So here's a clip.
Okay.
You don't clear. You don't. No. No, no. You don't. You don't. It doesn't matter how many days. Oh, how much time? We weren't supposed to be there. You had the knife. You had the gun. You were supposed to. You were supposed to. You know you were supposed to. Don't lie. You know. You know that you were supposed to.
Okay. Who the heck's he talking to?
He's talking to his demons, I guess.
I was trying to figure that out. Like, is he talking to himself? And, you know, that he was supposed to kill his, you know, put down his wife so that his wife didn't bite his son, or was he talking to Rick? Or, you know, that's what I was trying to figure out. Who's he talking to? I think he was talking to himself, saying these things, but it was like, you had the knife. That was the part. Had the knife. I know he had the gun, but I wasn't sure about the knife part. It threw me off. But anyway, this is just an example. And of course, the that awesome camera effect showed that Morgan was, after the episode of Clear, he pretty much went batshit crazy. And there were other things. Like, here's one that I think he might have said more than once. And I couldn't figure out what this was. 16 hours in, 19 on the floor. What? What was that? What does that mean?
I have no idea, except for the only thing I could think of. Okay, so say what he said again. Say that again.
He said 16 hours in, 19 on the floor.
I don't know. I just, the only thing that, I mean, okay, so that kind of reminded me of, I don't know. I don't know exactly, except for maybe that's how long that his wife was in childbirth. I don't know. I don't understand the hours in and on the floor bits, but it, to me, kind of, I don't know, like 16 hours in labor, and then I don't know, but I don't have any idea. I have absolutely no clue anything else that could mean. It just, for whatever reason, it struck me as I was listening to all of his crazy rantings, trying to pinpoint some type of sense to them, which may have been the mistake. To me, I just immediately, my brain latched onto that's how long that, what was her name? Julie was in labor with Dwayne.
Jenny
was in labor with Dwayne.
Well, the thing that, that got to me with that, was it didn't make a lot of sense, and a lot, the here's not here. What does that even mean? And of course, Eastman says that back to him later, and still, I don't get it. Does that just mean that he's not where his mind isn't where he is? Like, his mind's elsewhere? Is that what that means?
I don't know. I think maybe at the time that Eastman said it to Morgan, it was right after he got bitten, and Morgan was, you know, saying, "I said not here." And so he said, "Here's not here." And I guess maybe it means something like, maybe it doesn't matter where you are, kind of thing. It's always going to be with you or something. I don't know. I'm just kind of reaching about whatever stuff.
Something to do maybe with the PTSD.
Yeah.
Which I think was very, that is the correct diagnosis, I think, of him.
Absolutely.
You know, well.
Okay. Here's my deal with Morgan. I don't really understand why. Okay, so I get it that he was feeling compulsory towards killing all the walkers and all that kind of stuff as much as he could. We saw in the season 3 episode Clear that that's pretty much what he was doing. He had all these traps everywhere and he was just full on killing them, getting them, and then disposing of them. And he said that he has to clear and all that stuff. Okay. So that's fine. In that episode, I don't think that they saw him be just an out and out killer, a murderer, basically, because I mean, I guess some people could say the same thing about Rick, but I don't think so. I see a distinction between the two. Morgan, he just kind of, if you move, I'm going to kill you. And I didn't really, to me, I don't feel like that really jived with what we knew about him previously. I mean, we knew that he was experiencing this trauma from not having killed his wife who had turned into a walker, and that ultimately proved fatal to his son. And so he's racked with guilt and all that jazz, right? But how does that make you into a murderer? You're just going to, I mean, there are people running through the woods trying to assumingly get away from, walkers or whatever. And he just jabs one in the neck and then strangles the other one. And yeah. I mean, strangulation, that's a very, it's a very intimate, I guess, way to kill someone. Yeah. And so it's something that you do when, like, I'm so mad at you, I'm just going to choke the life out of you because I'm so mad or something, you know? And so, like, and they chose strangulation? Really? I just, I don't know. It just didn't jive with me. I can understand him. Like, I feel like there's a difference between a killer and a murderer. A killer is someone who can make those decisions and is able to get the job done, I guess. But a murderer, to me, is someone who just kind of kills for no reason, or maybe kills for pleasure. I mean, in this particular situation and universe, I guess, I would say there's a distinction.
Yes.
Or that would be the, I mean, I don't... now that there is not really any more retribution in society or whatever, I would say that would be how I would define murderer and killer. And I understand Morgan being a killer. I don't understand him being a murderer. And that's probably one of the reasons why I docked some points for this, because I can completely understand if he's, even before Zen, if he threatened that he would do what he needed to do to protect himself, I guess. And I would say that to me, the way that they had set him up in Clear was that he was on this mission. And that was his purpose in life, because his previous purpose got destroyed by, you know, another part of his purpose. Like, his two purposes came into direct conflict and destroyed each other or something or whatever. And so now it's his mission in life to just kill as many walkers as possible to sort of, you know, I don't know, clear the world or whatever. And I feel like this is in direct conflict with that, because I think he would kill if he needed to in order to continue on his mission if he were threatened in that way. But apparently that was not a correct assessment, because he, I guess, just wanted to die after all or something, because he said, or Lenny James was talking in Talking Dead about the reason why he was asking Eastman to kill him. And I don't know. I was like, really? He's just going to out and out murder those two people like that? They weren't threatening at all. And that one kid, I felt so bad. He was like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And yet he's just choking the life out of him. For why? Because if anything living comes at me, I'm going to kill it.
I was trying to figure out what he was sorry for, because those two didn't seem to be doing anything specifically, unless they were intending to steal his stuff or something.
Well, hell, if somebody were choking me out, I would probably say, I'm sorry, whatever I did, I'm sorry.
Well, that's true. But as far as Clear, my understanding from his character in Clear was that he would kill live people or dead it didn't matter.
But and why? Why did that? I mean, how did you get that? I don't understand that.
Well, he shot at Rick, Michonne, and Carl. And I think it was something that he said that I can't remember specifically. It's been a while since I've seen Clear, but I got the impression that he would clear everything, not just the dead, but he would clear people. Anything, like he said in this episode, anything that got near him, he would kill. So, I don't know. Maybe we'll get some feedback on this next episode.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I thought that initially he kind of mistook them for walkers because he didn't continually try to kill them. I mean, if that were the case, then he wouldn't have had whatever kind of crazy conversation he had. He wouldn't have had that. He would have just been steady trying to kill him.
Mm.
But he didn't.
And something else that is weird, if he was going to kill the two of them, why didn't he take them out as walkers too?
I mean, maybe he didn't. We just didn't see it.
Well, if he tried to, and maybe he killed the father as a walker, but he didn't get the son, you would think he would have, you know, taken them out. I just, that's the part of the, you know, the climactic scene, I guess you could say, that also doesn't make a lot of sense. How he let that teenager or whatever, however old he wasn't that old, come back as a walker and get Eastman.
Oh, okay.
I want, more we talk about it, the lower my score wants to be. Because
mm-hmm.
I think even with an 8.5, I was giving it certain
leeway.
Bonus points for being The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I do not award bonus points just because of the time.
Yeah.
Or the, just because of the show that you are. I never feel like there's an excuse for lazy writing.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, I the whole Morgan is a murderer thing is not jiving with me. I don't really have any other explanation other than the fact that I don't like, I don't know. I guess it goes back to the termites.
Yeah.
You know, they had all these horrible things happen to them. So they just decided to eat people.
Yeah.
I don't feel like that. They're like, that's not a straight line. I don't know.
Yeah. We talked about that.
I don't know how you got there, but okay.
Yeah.
Same thing here. I don't feel like it's a straight line from because to me, I feel like, okay, I didn't kill my walker wife when I should have, and so she basically killed my son. So now, because of that mistake of not killing that one particular walker, now I have to kill all the walkers. See, that makes sense to me. I can draw a straight line from that point A to, you know, point B. Didn't kill one, now I have to kill all. Get it. I got it. But to me, I feel like it's, you throw this other, and I have to kill live people too in there. I'm just, what?
The only thing I can think of is that saving people was considered pointless acts to him. Going right back to my pointless acts.
Yeah, thing. Pointless acts, but to go, I don't know, I guess it's not really out of your way, but to, I mean, I understand not saving people, but kind of, there's a huge long road in between not saving someone and actively killing them. So, I don't know, but I get it. I mean, I guess I could see what you're, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, okay. So taking Morgan into present time, the big thing that I think we can take out of this is, well, there's a couple things. This Zen philosophy, I don't think has been with him for that long. And this Alpha Wolf, which he saved, and I call him Alpha Wolf because I think that's what he was called in the credits. That's
yeah, what I think everybody's read. Calling him that. That's what I call yeah. him too.
Well, and that makes sense. That he found his Crichton Dallas Wilton on the first try. You know, so it took. Well, we don't know in that 825 some odd, you know, killers did Eastman, you know, find Wilton. But
I think so. He said in 825, there was only one that was truly evil.
Right. But I'm saying when in the 825, like what was it, halfway or did he see 600 and then he came up to or found Wilton, or was it early on? I don't know. It doesn't matter. But I'm saying, if this was the first or one of the first people that he saves like this, clearly this was not the right guy to try to save. I think in a lot of ways is just as much of a psychopath as Wilton was. You know?
Yeah, but I mean, we had this conversation about psychopath and sociopath and all that kind of stuff before. Yes. And I don't know whether or not the Alpha Wolf is one or the other or just plain old crazy. But so do you think that it's possible for Morgan to, quote, Eastman the Alpha Wolf?
No, I think that trying to convert the Alpha Wolf is doomed to fail. He's just fanatical and, you know, whether he's a psychopath or whatever, he is of a mental state that I think makes him unable to be saved. And I think that there's nothing that could be done with him. Other than maybe some really strong drugs, which aren't available, to convert or to reform him. You know, if he is Alpha, he may be the person who started the wolves. Mm-hmm. We don't know that, but
it's a good assumption to make, though. I mean, it's a reasonable assumption, I should say.
Well, regardless, he seems to be the leader. Mm-hmm. And if he is, he firmly believes in that crap.
His cause.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any way, not a snowball's chance in hell, that Morgan would be able to do that. Mainly because I don't feel like he has the right tools. And I don't think he's been sort of doing this long enough. You know,
yes.
You can't just spill your guts life story and then expect someone to go, oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah, he's not a psychiatrist. Yeah,
exactly. He's not a psychiatrist either, for one thing. I mean, it's one thing to recognize something that, recognize things that have happened to you and someone else. You know what I mean? Like, those kinds of, I've been through this trauma. I can see you going through this trauma. I can see the similar path that you are on right now that I took that one point in time or whatever. You know what I mean? You can recognize that, but to be able to actually help that person, I think you would need to be a little bit more removed from it than Morgan currently is.
And, you know, well, Morgan's not a psychiatrist, but guess who is a psychiatrist?
Yeah, our newest Alexandria doctor.
Yes.
Which, I guess if they go that route, she's going to die because he's going to kill her.
Yeah. Well, and he's
he's on death's door anyway, apparently.
Well, yeah. And I guess it's not a bite. It was really hard to see what that was, but it was a stab wound.
Some kind of knife. Yeah, I was going to say some kind of knife wound or something. I don't know. But yeah.
Well, I mean, let's assume. I mean, obviously, if it was a bite, you know, he's doomed. There's nothing that can be done.
Well, he's doomed either way. If he dies, he's doomed.
I want him to be doomed.
Right.
Because if he's not doomed, and for that matter, if not all the wolves are dead and they want to come back and get the Alpha Wolf, there's going to be problems.
Yep.
The biggest problem, though, is that he basically, by doing this, by trying to save this guy, he's imposed his entire philosophy on Alexandria and has made them vulnerable.
Yeah.
Very vulnerable.
Yeah. I don't know. Honestly, there was more than one issue I had with the whole, okay, I get it that he needs to get his zen from somewhere, but I sort of felt like, okay, I really liked the whole the doors open the whole time deal or whatever.
Yeah.
But I feel like they did that reveal a little too soon in the episode. Like, mm-hmm. He's not ready for that yet, I think. And I understand that you've got an abbreviated amount of time, but it's 90 minutes, for crying out loud. You could do it like 10 minutes later, that would be about halfway through the episode instead of one third of the way through or whatever. I don't know. I thought I liked where you were going with this, but I felt like they jumped the gun a little bit. And then I liked that, you know, Morgan went back in the cage and closed the door, but then Eastman opened the door again. A lot of stuff I liked. I feel like they just missed the mark on execution, I guess, a little bit. Mm-hmm. So
I want to talk about the philosophy in a second, but I'm going to bring up a question that I don't exactly have an answer for, but I figured we could talk about it. About Morgan. If he had come to Alexandria a little bit sooner, what would he have done with Pete? our porch dick.
Well, he wouldn't have offed him, that's for sure.
Yeah.
He would have zened him to death or something. I don't know.
I tend to think that he would have the possibility to be more successful with Pete than he would ever be with the Alpha Wolf.
Agreed.
But, you know, whether or not he could have been totally reformed, I don't know. But it's like you said, he's not a psychiatrist. He doesn't have the skills, you know.
Well,
the philosophy, here's the thing about it. He's got this philosophy, okay? And it seems very tenuous. Like his whole psyche now to me seems a lot more tenuous than I thought it was.
Yeah.
You know, it's based on some assumptions that are, you know, not true. And that makes him a character that could very well become unstable again, I think.
So
given the circumstances.
What assumptions are not true?
Well, and this goes into the philosophy, I guess. So I think this philosophy of, you know, not ever killing, I think is flawed in the world of The Walking Dead. And I think we talked about it already. I don't think you can save a psychopath. There are some people that just cannot be saved. And Eastman, I think he shows this, but at the same time, like there was a couple of issues with that whole thing. Maybe his philosophy or how he came up to it, I think were flawed as well. Eastman did not have to kill Wilton. He tried to do it to make himself feel better. And, you know, it wasn't anything that was necessary. He didn't have to do it. He could have just let him rot in prison and it didn't make him feel better, but you shouldn't feel better by killing. Killing a person is not something you should feel good about, whether you're in the apocalypse or not.
Well, I mean, he basically said as much when he said that people aren't built to kill.
Right. But there are some people that take pleasure in it, you know, and there are truly psychopathic people that, you know, are wired a different way. And, you know, I mean, there are many serial killers that you can, you know, take a look at and study that were truly psychopathic that seemed to be this, you know, wonderful, you know, people loved them and, you know, how they were well liked and they were killers in the later that was discovered, you know? So I think those people, you know, you can't fix that except for, you know, maybe with drugs. I don't know. I'm not a psychiatrist. So I don't know these things, but I don't think that type of mental state can be fixed by some philosophy. And there are times, I think, in the apocalypse where killing is necessary. I think in war, you know, like what happened in JSS, to me, that's war. You know, this band of wolves, you know, comes to their town and tries to kill everyone. To me, that's an act of war. That is justifiable to kill those people. You have to do that to survive. So the philosophy is just not quite, it doesn't make any sense to me. It's flawed. For most people, I think it does work, but it's one of those things. It's like in science, you come up with a theory and it may fit, you know, 99.999% of the time, but that small fraction that it doesn't fit, it blows out the theory. You know, mm-hmm. The theory's wrong.
Right.
And it's similar with this philosophy, I think. It may work for most people, but it's those ones that it doesn't work for that cause all the problems.
Yeah. I had a slightly different take on it. So Eastman, I guess, has become, in every sense of the word, a pacifist. And I don't particularly agree with that line of thinking or life philosophies or whatever, but I can understand why someone might feel that way. I feel like Morgan was not long enough with that philosophy to be able to impart it on someone else.
Yeah.
Truly. I kind of relate it to, and I've never, this is not from personal experience, just from what I know from my secondhand experience. I relate it to, like being in AA or any other kind of, whatever anonymous program, NA, AA, gambling, whatever.
Mm, yeah.
That you, and they're basically like addicts helping addicts, right?
Right.
Which works for them, but you don't give someone, or you don't, I don't think anyway, maybe I'm wrong, but as far as I know, you don't make someone be a sponsor for someone else who's only 30 days sober, right?
Right.
I mean, you've had to have been in the program for a little while and working the program for a little while in order to fully, for one thing, fully grasp it and get it to work for you, basically. Figure out how to make it work in your life before you can instruct someone else in how to help them make it work for them. It's like you can't lift someone else up if you're on the same level, you know? If you are trying to, let's say there's like this big, huge pit and someone has fallen into it. If you're down in that pit with them, you can't lift them out of the pit. They would have to stand on your shoulders to do it and basically push you back down. And that just isn't going to work for that kind of a thing. You need to be up on the higher ground in order to be able to lift someone up to your level, basically. And I think that's true with any kind of Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever anonymous program that has sponsors and that kind of stuff. And I feel like that would probably be true with what Morgan is doing. I just don't think that he has enough spirit. He's like only 30 days sober, let's just say. And that's just right. Not enough time to be able to impart that on someone who, you know, furthermore, may or may not ever really be able to get it based on, mm-hmm. you know, might not be susceptible to that or I guess susceptible would be the best word that I can think of for now. But anyway, that was my main problem with it. I didn't think that it, you know, whether or not that's a proper philosophy for this universe aside, I just didn't think that he had enough experience with it to really be able to help someone else, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like he is living the philosophy without fully understanding it, you know? Fully understanding why it is what it is. But I will say this. I was thinking that, you know, in many ways, Morgan was like Luke Skywalker in The Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He shouldn't have left the Dagobah system.
Right? Yeah, exactly. He should have stayed in Dagobah and not gone after his friends.
Yep.
Even though he knew that Darth Vader was there. He should have stayed. Should have completed his training.
He should have stayed.
I think, honestly, I have such mixed feelings about this episode. I sort of feel like I was let down a little bit by the cheesemaker. I was thinking that the cheesemaker would be so much more than
Yoda.
He was, I guess. Yeah, I guess kind of more like Yoda, really, if you boil it down. And I mean, and what you said is very, very telling about Eastman didn't really seem like he was that ninja with his bow staff, but yet somehow he trained Morgan to be this super badass ninja with his bow staff. I'm like, it doesn't really work that way,
right?
Generally speaking. I mean, I understand that there's natural talent and all that kind of stuff, but typically speaking, in order to be able to make someone a complete and total, you know, BAMF, you kind of have to be an even bigger and better and badder BAMF. So it's sort of, and I get it, it's production, they're actors, there's only so much that you can do, but sort of felt like a little bit of a gaping hole, honestly.
And since we mentioned that in a prior episode, the town in Alberta is Banff, not Banff. I realized that after.
Oh, that's funny. Well,
yeah. Mm. One thing that I liked, and we kind of talked a little bit about this, I guess, ties to things that we have seen before. I mentioned the now and then, but we saw the things that that Morgan put at the altar from Coda, the Goo Goo clusters, the rabbit's foot, the bullet. Obviously, he didn't get the bullet from Eastman. That came from those two, I don't know, were
kids.
kids, hippies.
I don't know. I thought they were kids.
Whatever.
Honestly. Yeah. They looked like kids.
They definitely were young. I don't know. But yeah, so that was kind of cool.
Yeah. I don't know. I sort of feel like, it's so weird for me to say this, but I sort of feel like in some areas it was rushed. Like, I didn't really feel like, okay, I understand eventually he's got to, I guess, so to speak, the switch has to flip. He's got to, something has to click or whatever for him to suddenly decide to not be, to not clear or whatever. But it sort of seemed like, I don't know. I mean, okay, yeah, the kids saying thank you or something, that's what did it. That's what made him, that's what flipped the switch, basically, is that these two kids gave him a can of chicken noodle soup and a bullet. And so that is all I needed to decide to change my killing ways. I don't know. I just, it didn't really feel earned, I guess. Again, I think I would go back to the whole, he got let out a little bit too early, I think. And honestly, I sort of felt like, to be perfectly frank, that maybe Eastman wasn't really all that super long with his, with this Zen ninja warrior bow staff philosophy thing, to really be imparting it to Morgan. I think that he just kind of had the added advantage of being a psychiatrist. So he could recognize and diagnose certain, mental problems or something. I don't really know a good way to say that. But, you know, I mean, he could, he could diagnose this, what's happening to Morgan without needing to be a complete and total super ninja warrior. But I sort of, you know, I was kind of like, because he, and again, I would say that because he kind of made these serious flubs, you know, he let Morgan out of the cage too soon, I felt. And then, you know, again, it's logistics more than it is a story choice, but not being quite as good with the bow staff, apparently, as Morgan. You know, I mean, I don't really know how to feel about that. I understand that you've got a production schedule and all that kind of stuff. But then on the other hand, and, you know, it's TV, you've got only a certain amount of budget or whatever. But this is The Walking Dead. I would think that maybe they would get a little bit more budget or something. And if they did this episode out of order, maybe they could have known and sort of brought whomever, whichever actor they were going to bring in to do this a little bit sooner so that they could be training, so that it would make a little bit more sense that he would, I don't know. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of, like I said, I feel torn about criticizing for that, because I understand that it's, you know, it's TV and you've only got, you know, you have to be able to suspend your disbelief for certain things and all that stuff. So I don't know.
And it is a zombiepocalypse, right? We do have to suspend our disbelief.
Well, right, but I mean that's part of the show. That's the premise of the show.
Exactly.
So, well, I'm sorry, but Ninja Warriors are not the premise of the show. So that's what I mean. Like it's more of a limit due to production thing. But I've seen other shows that have less do more. So I don't know. That's kind of what I'm getting at is like, it kind of seems like they sort of dropped the ball on that. Like they could have, they mm-hmm. had the opportunity to possibly, allow that actor to be a better, Bo Staff Aikido Ninja Warrior or whatever than they truly had the opportunity to be. And I don't know. Like I said, I kind of feel weird about criticizing because of that. But then at the same time, I'm like, well, you could have, couldn't you? I mean, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm making assumptions about their budget, obviously, but.
Or simply hire an actor who had more martial arts
who already skill. Was a ninja.
Chuck Norris.
That would have been kind of blow my mind a little bit.
I know.
Oh my gosh, it's Chuck Norris.
And you know, not to, I thought that he was really good in the role.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, you know, Lenny James was phenomenal. I mean, they were great together. Mm-hmm. There's mm-hmm. not a criticism of that, right. but you know, it's like you say, you can't expect, an intermediate to train someone that's going to become an expert in a bow staff,
usually,
you know?
Not, that's usually not the case.
Right.
However, in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, she did surpass her master. So there is that.
Length. Did you find it was too long, too short? What?
No. But I kind of felt like they sort of squandered their time a little bit. Like I said, they didn't. I mean, this is the kind of episode where you take your time, but then, I don't know, there were things that kind of weren't. Like they were, I don't know. Just, and like I said, you know, again, going back to the like letting out of the cage too early. And maybe all that stuff was on purpose and I just didn't get it. You know, maybe the idea is that, no, he wasn't this perfect, Yoda Zen master that we were all imagining him to be. But I kind of, honestly, I sort of think that I might have liked the story a little bit better had, John, what's his name? John Carroll Lynch had his character turned out to be, let's say that this, whatever Crichton Dallas Wilton character had not been a full on out and out psychopath. Let's say he was just a regular old, you know, screwed up criminal person type thing. I think it kind of would have been a little bit more genuine had it turned out that, he was actually Crichton Dallas Wilton and he just adopted the persona of Eastman because he felt guilty for what he had done to his family or something, you know, maybe not make the family or the bits about the family and, you know, him being a psychopath be quite so extreme or whatever. You know, so he felt a little guilty, I guess, or whatever. So he decided, he vowed after being this horrible person, he vowed to, change his evil ways and adopt the persona of this psychiatrist guy. And at the end, you know, Lenny James would have found, instead of seeing the Eastman headstone at the end after we, you know, figured out that, yeah, that Eastman obviously did not survive his wounds, you know, then he would have seen it and then he would have been like, what? I thought you were Eastman. And then he would have been like, remember that story I told you? Well, I'm really Crichton Dallas Wilson and I, you know, decided to mend my evil ways with a hick accent. And, you know, I don't know. I just thought that kind of would have been like, maybe, I don't know, maybe that would have been a trope too, but it seems like that might have been a little bit more meaty, a little bit more interesting, maybe. I don't know.
Do you have anything else?
Well, I thought, I guess, going back to the whole philosophy thing, I thought it was kind of interesting the differentiation between killing walkers and killing other things, because if you draw that all life is precious out to its logical end, then why are not walkers part of that? Because there are other people in this universe who don't believe that they are, you know, they think that they're just sick people who need to be cured. So, yeah.
Well, for that matter, like you said, how far do you want to take that? All life is precious. That could mean, you know, all mammals. That could mean, you know, you can't kill insects. That could even mean plants. That the only thing you could eat would be air. you could be a breatharian.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you ever heard of that, but that's a real crazy one.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, that's true. It's, I mean, I don't know.
I guess the last thing that I had was I was sorry to see Tabitha not survive, although it was
fated.
It was fitting. It was, I guess she was doomed, but yeah. She was cute. She was a very cute goat. And she kind of, every time I saw her, she would make me smile.
Yeah.
So
I agree. I was very, I don't know why I was sad about Tabitha, but I was pretty sad about Tabitha. Although I knew from the moment I saw the goat on the screen that goat was going to die. I just didn't know exactly when.
Yeah.
And I sort of feel more traumatized about the goat, honestly, than anything else, because it's like they brought this sort of cushy little creature who, let's be honest, sounds a little bit human, like with her, you know. Yeah, but then when the walkers got even closer, she was like, and I was like, oh, beep, she's getting eaten. I thought she was getting eaten like right then, and it freaked me out. And I was like, no! And I sort of felt a little traumatized by that. I was like, no, you can't do this to me. Oh, she's not dead yet. But yeah, I was like, man, why did the goat have to die? I mean, just all right, whatever. Oh. Just pull my heart out and crush it like they do on Once Upon a Time. Okay, the last thing that I wanted to mention was I thought it was kind of interesting that I guess based on the end here that Morgan kind of – he didn't – I guess – okay, so – I can't remember if you thought this, but I sort of thought that Morgan was seeking out Rick, that he had, because I think, didn't he tell him in clear, hey, we're at this prison, you should come, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so I thought that he had followed the breadcrumbs, if you will, of, you know, found the prison, oh, they're not here, where are they, and kind of followed the sort of not really easy to follow trail or something of, you know, just kind of basically was following after them. But in this episode, it's sort of, they kind of made it seem like he was actually just headed to Terminus all along, and stumbling across Rick was kind of coincidental, I guess. And I mean, he found the map, and then I guess when he found the map, that's when he decided to go after them. But I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting. What, I mean, did you get that impression that they had set it up to where he was not actually trying to find Rick, that he just kind of was headed towards Terminus and so was Rick. So it's kind of this big, huge, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I figured that Rick told him where they were. Obviously, he knew what prison they were at. And if anyone would know how to get there, it would be a forensic psychiatrist who dealt with criminals that were going to get out and evaluating them for, you know, their mental state. Mm-hmm. He would have known exactly where to go.
Where that prison was.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I thought of that. And I also thought that Morgan was going there. I wondered if when he said that, you know, we need a crowbar and a tarp and a couple other things, I think he said, I know where we can find that. I had wondered, like, was it the settlement, his little settlement where he wrote all the crazy stuff that he meant, or did he mean the prison?
I assumed he meant his settlement because that's where they went.
That is what I thought as well, but I thought that it might be possible that Morgan and Eastman, if they had survived, would have gone towards the prison. And assuming for a second that he did, Morgan, of course, would have found the prison in its state and probably kept going, realizing that obviously Rick wasn't there. Mm-hmm. But that was my take, that Morgan was heading towards the prison, at least he had been.
So they just like skipped over those bits or whatever. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's true or not.
Mm. It's as good as anything.
Only the producers would know, but
yeah,
that was my take.
Yeah. And they, did you hear they busted out with this whole, like the bar or the t-shirt that he was wearing was this fictional bar that, you know, this, that. And I was like, wow, that's very elaborate for a t-shirt.
Yeah, the terrapins.
Yeah, terrapins. And it's that kind of attention to detail that makes me just scratch my head at some other things that happen. And I just like, why you put so much thought into this t-shirt that the guy's wearing? Why could you not have, you know, I don't know.
A better death scene.
Yeah, or something, or a better method for getting bit.
Yeah.
More believable, I totally should say, agree. Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was my final thing about the whole, whether or not he decided to go to Terminus or if he was trying to find Rick the whole time or whatever. So, I don't know.
Yeah. But that was my take. He was going for the prison, found it, then saw the Terminus signs and started heading down that way until he got to the one that said no sanctuary.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. Feedback?
Yes. It's time for some feedback.
All right. Well, our first one, Robert C., speaking of Tabitha, he says, Tabitha, no!
I felt the same way. How could you do this?
Yeah, I did too. Yeah, she was cute.
She was cute, anyway. And she made cute little baa noises.
Yeah.
Like she was real live goat. Until she wasn't.
Yeah, played by
Ruby. Yes, Ruby the goat. And apparently the goat wrangler actually brought real live goat cheese.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I don't know if the goat wrangler was a she, but she, Ruby the goat, I guess, gave milk just like her fictional counterpart. And the goat wrangler made cheese out of it and brought it on set. And the, I don't know, someone said that the crew, I guess, the camera people or whatnot, would put in these, like, I don't know, all kinds of crazy ingredients into the goat cheese to elicit reactions from Jonathan Carroll Lynch. So, you know, when he's eating the cheese and he's like, oh, that's...
Yeah.
I think that's what they were referring to. Like, they put weird things, I guess, in the cheese or whatever to make it be, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever eaten thing that he said, whatever he said about the cheese.
Speaking of that, I wanted to just remind me of that. Morgan refers to him as a cheese maker, but he didn't make very good cheese.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
It was a work in progress like the rest of him.
Yes. Progress. Yep. Okay, next.
Okay, so Ryan says, what a blah episode. Great to hear what happened to Morgan, but it didn't need to be an hour and a half long episode.
Yeah, I tend to think that an hour would have been enough. I heard another podcast talk about this, and it was a weird thing. It could have been better served if it was an hour or 2 hours. But an hour and a half didn't seem to fit. It was almost like by telling it in an hour and a half, they had to miss certain things that, you know, would have been nice to cover. Whereas if it had been an hour, they would have skipped over those things. But some of the things that they left in, you know, were kind of, it seemed, I didn't say this before, but this is a good time to say it. It seemed self-indulgent to me, this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, that's definitely, yeah, good word.
Yeah. Yeah. So, obviously, you know, there were a lot of people that loved this episode and a lot of people that weren't so hot on it. And Bob was in the first category. He said, great episode of TV. It was really good to see backstory about a great character, Morgan.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I liked the backstory, but I do sort of feel like it was a little, I don't know. There you go.
Gotta have Price is Right. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah, that's kind of sort of like, oh, but you just missed the mark a little bit.
Just by a little.
Okay, so Malika says, I find it interesting that the things Morgan left at the altar in the church were things he got at Eastman's. As far as the not killing thing versus what Carol does, there has to be a balance. I agree. Balance is better than either extreme, to be honest. So, good call.
Yeah. Okay. Judy said, I don't think I can add much to what was said on Talking Dead. Mm-hmm. I like the pace of the show. Slow but steady. I did notice that while Morgan, Lenny James, was telling the story of the sequence of filming, he said they filmed episodes 5, 6, and 7. I thought it was 5, 6, 7, and 8, but regardless. And then episode 4. Does that mean after episode 7 he is gone? I don't know. It could be. That wasn't said, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Morgan doesn't last past season 6. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to speculate at this point in time, honestly.
Well, if you would like to speculate, go to walkingdeathpool.com. And I think, I don't know the name of the pool for this coming week, but it's probably something like season 6, episode 5. Right now they have the episode-to-episode pools. So if you want to speculate, there's your chance.
Cool. Perfect place for people who like to speculate, which is not always me. All right.
I'd say it's never you.
Yeah, well, I did make my one prediction that it might be the one prediction ever.
Make them count.
That wasn't really a prediction, honestly. Anyway, okay, so up next, Sophie says, great episode. When the episode started, I figured we would get an all Morgan episode, no resolution to Glenrick, etc. But I forgot about that almost immediately and was sucked into the story. I always loved Morgan and this didn't change that. There was such little dialogue and still so much content. I cried when Tabitha died and when Eastman was bit while still trying to help Morgan with his progress. He truly made an impact on Morgan. His reason for not wanting to kill makes a lot of sense now, even though I agree with Malika, there has to be a balance. I wonder if he is really planning to starve that wolf. I don't think he will after Eastman telling him it won't give him any peace. If not, then what is his plan? There is no way the others will agree to treat his wound and save him. Oh, and by the way, how creepy was that wolf in the end? He is certifiable.
Psychopath.
Yeah. P.S. I read on Twitter that Steven Yeun's name was no longer in the credits. Are the showrunners trying to throw us off, or does it mean something very sad? A scared emoji that looks like the Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone when he puts the aftershave on his face.
Yeah, I had to ask. She had this emoji, and I'm like, what is that?
I think I know what emoji that is. I think I've seen that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to actually mention that in my own, I had that in my own notes, and then I noticed that Sophie had it in her feedback. So, yeah, Steven Yeun, they had taken him right out of that spot in the opening credits where usually he's around that pocket watch.
Yeah. And, I know.
He was not there.
Wow, yeah. That's funny because I was actually, I normally don't really pay that close attention to the opening credits, but this time I did, and they pretty much showed the actors names right around the item that is important or synonymous with them, like Daryl's leather vest with the wings, Rick's huge gun, Carol's brass knuckle knife, and they did pause dramatically around the pocket watch, and I was actually thinking to myself that that was where Steven Yeun's name should be, but then the next name was some unidentifiable thing with Lauren Cohan. So I thought, oh, maybe the pocket watch was supposed to be hers. I don't know. I didn't really make that connection. Mm. But now that you say that, makes sense.
So we should try to answer her question. Do we think it was the showrunners trying to throw us off, or does it mean something very sad? What do you think?
I think it means something very sad.
I think it's the showrunners trying to throw us off.
I think that there might be... they are shooting in Atlanta, not LA, but I know that there are all different kinds of unions and all that kind of stuff. And I think that name placement in opening credits is totally a union thing. So I don't know if you could necessarily use that as part of your artistic license, you know, as part of your storytelling, I guess, or whatever.
Or misdirection. Yeah, the Walking Dead hasn't been very consistent in this regard. Like, I know when Dale and Shane were killed off, John Bernthal and Jeffrey DeMunn were still in the credits, the episodes that didn't have mm-hmm. them. I know...
Same with Emily Kinney, right?
No, I think Emily Kinney was taken off the credits, as was Chad L. Coleman, I think. I'd have to go back and confirm that, but... I do know, however, that Lori, Sarah Wayne Callies, she was on the entire season 3, although she was killed in episode 4. And of course, she, you know, her ghost or whatever kept coming back to Rick, but she was on the credits the whole season 3. Now, David Morrissey and Michael Rooker didn't show up until the third episode, which was the episode that they actually appeared. And I think, I'm not 100% sure of this, but I'm pretty sure that Michael Rooker was not shown on the 16th episode. Scott Wilson, same kind of thing. He was shown for the first 9 in season 4 and then the last episode, and not 10 through 15.
See, that's kind of what makes me think that this is more of a union thing rather than specifically storytelling misdirections.
Or it's a contract.
See, that's what I mean by union, yeah. I guess. Like, that's because I think the unions have a lot to do with the types of contracts that people get.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the Screen Actors Guild, and I don't know if there are other union-y organizations for actors, but there are, I do know that they have, I mean, there are certain types of rules for those things. So, and I think where you are in the credits, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Like, if you are, I don't know. I'm pretty sure that that is something that you don't fiddle with for purposes of story, I guess. That's something that's kind of, that's outside of the story and is not to be messed with. So that's kind of what makes me think that it's not really a misdirection.
Yeah. Well, it could be a misdirection. It could be a non-misdirection. Like I say, I don't think The Walking Dead's really been consistent with a pattern here. I tend to think that it is the showrunners kind of playing a fast one, but at the same time, it may have something to do with Steven Yeun's contract not requiring him to be in the credits. I don't know. It could be either way.
I think that whether or not, like, I don't know. I don't think that I don't think that you can say that they're not consistent about it, because we don't know whether or not they are or not, because we don't know what all of those actors' contracts were. So based on, I mean, just because they, you know, they do or don't put people in the credits doesn't really mean anything. It could be because if they're in the episode, then their name is in the credits, or if they are a, whatever main cast member, then they're in all the credits regardless of whether or not they're You know, I mean, it's that kind of stuff. So I don't know that you can say that they're not consistent because we don't know. We don't have enough information, I guess, is what I would say.
I think that's the conclusion is, Sophie, we're not sure.
We don't know. We're not Hollywood experts.
Yes. And if I had time, I would study each and every episode. And at some point I will for this, but not right now. So, okay. So our next feedback is from Dieta. And again, she's got some really good points here. And it seems like she's kind of in agreement with both of us. So 90 minutes of Morgan really wasn't necessary to me. I kept falling asleep. I don't know if it was the time change or the episode was blah, like Ryan said. They could have split it evenly with the follow-up of last week's episode. I felt like I was watching Kung Fu Theater or the making of The Karate Kid. I'm sorry, but I never did understand what the big deal was about Morgan coming back to the story. Okay, so we know why he's not crazy yet anymore, or is he? He didn't kill that wolf, but instead locked him in the basement for what? And then to find it was the same guy that killed Eastman's family, but you still want to tie him up and sing Kumbaya and make him change? Was that a bite mark? So now he is going to turn and kill Morgan? Or wait, he can kill walkers? So it's going to kill somebody else? I'm sorry, but Morgan has already put Rick in danger and is now putting the survivors of Alexandria at risk. His nonviolent movement is not good for our group. It keeps putting our people at risk. Morgan has moved up my death pool, and I believe Rick is going to be the one to put him down, especially after he finds out about the attack on Alexandria. And Morgan has one, namely the Alpha Wolf, stashed in his basement. And if something has happened to Judith, we still don't know what the other wolf got that baby food for. I personally think the leftover Alexandrians will agree that they need to learn how to fight in order to survive. Okay. So I told her that I was going to reply to part of that. Creighton Dallas Wilton was shown as one of the graves at Eastman's cabin. So he wasn't Creighton Dallas Wilton.
Right.
What I saw was Eastman said he starved Wilton to death, and that took 47 days.
Right.
And then Alpha Wolf, which I called in my prepared statement, Alpha Wolfie. I don't know why he said that, but anyway. Alpha Wolfie said, "So I know I'm probably going to die, but if I don't, I'm going to have to kill you, Morgan. I'm going to have to kill every person here, every one of them, the children too, just like your friend Eastman's children. Those are the rules. That's my code. I'd say I'm sorry, but you said it right. Don't ever be sorry." I said it earlier. I think he was a psychopath, but just not Wilton. What about you?
Yeah, I can understand why you would think that, because he did kind of what he said sort of alluded to that. But yeah, Morgan knew that, or Morgan got the full story out of Eastman after discovering his little, it's not really a headstone, his head wood piece. I don't know what you call that. His grave marker. So he definitely was not Creighton Dallas Wilton. But yeah, I don't know. Lots of questions, lots of answers I don't have. Except for that, that was not Crichton, whatever. But I think that would have been, it would have made for an interesting story if it had been. If Eastman had not gone back to get him and starved him to death and all that jazz. And then, you know, Morgan stumbles across the man who basically ruined his Zen master's life. I mean, that's kind of a dilemma of, gee, what do? I've got this philosophy, but I really want to kill this guy because he did this horrible, bad thing to my, my sensei or whatever. So, yeah, that's what I think about that.
All right, we got one more.
So, Jeff says, always brief, Jeff is, I appreciate that. I don't mind. He said, "I enjoyed the story and didn't mind the wait to find out what happens next."
I guess he, when he says the wait for finding out what happened to Glenn, I guess we do, like I said, with the open the gate, we do, you know, get an inkling that Rick survives, but we don't know how. So I'm sure we'll find out next episode.
Miraculously. That's how.
All right. To submit your feedback, well, like most people here, you can use our Facebook group, and that seems to be our number one way of getting feedback, and it's a great group. You can go to it by going and join us by going to facebook.com/groups/WalkingDeadGSM. And to submit audio feedback, and you written feedback as well, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, and you can leave an audio file. There's a SpeakPipe widget there you can use, and the phone number's there, which is the same phone number that you hear at the start of the episode. So the deadline for submitting feedback is 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, the Tuesday after the episode aired. And I should mention, we are going to record a little bit later next week. I think we were talking about Wednesday morning. So you have a little more time to record.
Yeah. So you've got until, well, yeah. Just be on the safe side and do it sometime Tuesday night, because we're gonna probably do it early in the morning on Wednesday. So, but I don't think that will affect our release time or anything. It's just our record time is all. Yeah. And if you want to find out any other way to connect with us, go to walkingdeadtalkthrough.com to find out how. And, also, before we go, we would like your support in any way that you can give it to us. There are lots of different ways that you can do that. You can give us a rating or a review on iTunes. That's probably one of the best ways. But right now, since it is November and next month is that all-important holiday, we would like it if you would use our Amazon affiliate link for all of your Amazon Christmas purchases. It doesn't cost you anything extra. It's super easy to do. And it will give us, or Amazon, I should say, will basically give us a little bit of a
finder's fee.
Finder's fee, yeah. So basically, it's for the referral. If you go and buy something on Amazon, we would appreciate you thinking about us and our affiliate link. And I will put directions for that in the show notes, as I always do. And yeah, happy shopping.
We should also thank, as far as the iTunes reviews, we got two this week, one from Kira7 and one from Maisie Girl, a 5-star and a 4-star. So thank you very much for giving your reviews. We really appreciate it. And you listeners, we love some more reviews. Helps us get discovered.
Yep. Okay. Our next episode is called Now. And it was written by Corey Reed and directed by Avi Ubian. And the description is, as usual, vague. Following a number of setbacks, the mood in Alexandria grows grim for the sheltered citizens. Dun, dun, dun!
And this is it for this episode. But until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And this is
The Walking Dead Talk Through.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.